So you had a heck of a day at school today, huh?
So kind of an ongoing situation, so I can't talk about it too much. It's student stuff. Some long running stuff apparently that is just yesterday, like on Sunday, flared up again. Some stuff over social media and those kinds of things. And it was apparently an enough's enough situation. So one of the students emailed me and one of the other teachers. And so today, like all of the downtime in between our online classes and everything, was spent kind of running stuff down on that, talking to some of the students, talking to our school counselor, talking to admin about stuff. And I don't want to like amp up the mystery on it too hard or anything.
Right.
Like, it's not nothing. Like, it is serious, but it's mostly just high level disrespectful talk between students.
But the amount of work that it creates is tremendous.
Exactly. Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's just in terms of trying to like kind of get like the groundwork laid. Like, it's not even, you know, the other hard part is trying to figure out what you do as a consequence for it, because you know, you can't do detention.
I never even thought about that.
You can't do, like, even if it's too serious for a detention, like, you can't really do a suspension, you know. It's so,
and it's hard because, like, how do you discipline social media?
So one of the nice things as a private school is that they are representing our school at all times. Like, that's one of the things in the student handbook that they and their parents sign every year. And so really, they're still accountable throughout. And
wow,
you know, I mean,
that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it can sound and seem kind of like over the top and everything a little bit, but it's like, we know that they're junior high students, you know, so it's not like normal stupidity is going to get you in any kind of significant trouble. Like, we're not trying to run you down.
It's not like you have a social media auditor going through there looking for pictures. I got you.
No, and it's not like, you know, if I were to see them at the grocery store and hear them like talking disrespectfully or something like that, yeah, I'll probably be like, really? Is that how things are going to be? Is that how we're going to handle ourselves? But like, that's it. It's not like I'm going to ask them for their agenda so I can give them their write-up or anything. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, they are representing our school at all times. And so, there is room for them to be held accountable. Like, we never spell out exactly what the consequences will be. We spell out some things that they could be, but always, you know, you don't want to overly paint yourself into a corner either, where because of a technicality, this falls under this category, which means now this kid has to be gone, even though you normally never would or anything like that.
Right. But what it is it adds support to, you know, like, because cyberbullying is such a real thing that if you aren't able to go in and use anything cyber as validation, then all you have is just he said, she said claims. But now you can kind of show that they are legitimately being bullied, just not in front of the teacher. You know, like, the world is just so different now. So I like the idea that you represent something all the time. Like, you're never not representing something. So I think there's a lesson in that as in itself, but it also is good for accountability.
Oh, definitely. Cause I mean, like, again, it kind of is a testimony to how long this has been going on and how long it's been known by the student, at least, to be a problem, that like she was ready to screenshot stuff and like attach that to the email about some of the things. And so I was talking to one of the boys who was involved, and he was like, I was talking to them, and then I was letting them know that there was going to be a call coming from our principal and our school counselor later on in the day to their families. And I was like, so I would really strongly recommend that you have a very honest conversation with your parents about exactly what you did or did not do, so that they're not getting blindsided on the call. And one of the kids was like, just out of curiosity, like, what did they say that I did, or what did they say that I said? And I was like, and I asked him, I was like, dude, is this a question because you don't know what you've done? Or is this a question because you don't want to confess to anything that we can't pin on you? And he was like, no, I know what I said, but I'm not sure, like, how they took things. It's like, I'm going to be real honest with you, man. We've got screenshots, so there's not a lot of room for interpretation.
I love that. They're always looking for an out, man. Always looking for an out.
Like, the idea that he didn't know what we had, because, like, so I had a group of them in the Zoom call together. I was like, okay, guys, we're going to play a game. And this is a game called Why Is This Okay? And I'm going to tell you about something, like a situation. And if you think you can explain to me why it's okay that a person did this, you go ahead and tell me about it. And I went through it. And as I'm listing things, I can, like, watch his face, like, losing color with each thing that I'm adding. He's like, okay, nope. Yeah, I know exactly what this is. I know. Yep. Know that one too. And it's like, dang it, kid.
Oh, God. You gotta love them, but sometimes wish you could shake them.
That's the part that kills, man. Is it's like, and that's one of the first things I said after we got done with our game that they quickly realized I wasn't playing with. I was like, I need you guys to understand the reason I am so incredibly frustrated right now is because in my first default response to anything like this about you guys is, these are good kids, there's no way. And then it clearly is, and I still stand by, you're good kids, but this was an incredibly stupid decision, and like, so there's got to be consequences that come with it. It's like, all right, yeah, you can get sheepish all you want now, but
yep,
it was a long day though.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear
took a lot out on the mental front.
I believe that. Good thing we're only, like, talking about the most complex of the four loves tonight. Hopefully you're ready for that.
Oh yeah, yeah, you know. Well, you know. Well, but so here's the good thing though, like, I can also totally just, like, wimp out on it and be like, oh, you know, it's God's love, it's a mystery.
Oh,
I'm not gonna do it.
I'd be so mad. Brandon, I mean, you're relying on me for this one, and the fans will struggle.
No, we're good. No. We're good.
All right, welcome to the podcast.
Honestly, if anything today really, like, amped up this one.
There you go. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. We are here for some meaningful conversations and delicious beverages. And as always, we like to discuss the latter. Have you had anything good lately?
Honestly, man, I didn't. This weekend was, like, basically just me and my computer and getting ready for, you know, this was the first week of classes where we weren't primarily doing procedural stuff. And so getting all that stuff together, man, like, I never got out and got anything interesting to drink, and I'm very disappointed with myself. You even sent me a notice for Friday, a discount that I could go and get my growler refilled.
Yeah.
And then I completely forgot about it until, like, 9 o'clock at night as I was going to bed on Friday. Oh, I was like, oh,
bummer. Yeah, yep. That's all right. I still got my two growlers.
Try again this Friday.
I still got one saved for you.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, that's a bummer. So, yeah, I don't know. I have no good advice because I'm here. So, like, all I do is cook. That's, like, my whole thing. So, like, I'm always planning beverages and food and stuff, like, all the time. So that's, but I mean, that's me. That's why I'm on the roaster side of the business. So.
Fair enough. There was nothing that would have prevented me from getting something. It's just like it just never even occurred to me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When I wasn't working on stuff for school, I was instead playing video games. You know, not a super productive use of my time, but I needed some non-productive use of my time as well. But yeah, like, the idea of leaving the house just was never something that actually even occurred to me this weekend. I think it's been so long since I've consistently been out of the house that I'm not sure how to handle it anymore. But it's like, oh, boy, these are my 2 days where I am home.
That's the truth. I had that sense of Groundhog Day this weekend. That was bad. To where it's like, it's Saturday, but I can't tell the difference anymore. Like, they're all exactly
calendars
the same.
Have lost all meaning.
Yeah, and somebody, and it, you know, of course, like I was doing fine, and then somebody had to use the phrase Groundhog Day, and I was like, oh, that's funny. And then I wake up Saturday, and I'm like, I've lived this day before. So it was not. They screwed with my brain, man. But no, we had some fun this weekend. I tried to make a latte without an espresso machine. So
okay,
it was a challenge. So I posted on Instagram today. So if you're interested in the videos, I didn't do a very good job. So I'm using a mocha pot instead of espresso. A mocha pot is like those little Italian mothers brewers, the little metal things that you put on the stove.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's not espresso, but it's much stronger coffee. And I've used it a few times, but I'm not a professional by any stretch of the imagination. And then for the milk, you just kind of like microwave it until it gets the temperature, and then you use your French press, and you can just like jam it up and down and get bubbles in there, and it'll actually make a pretty good foam. And so I was like, this looks like nonsense. I don't believe any of you. And so I had to do it this weekend, and it was surprisingly pretty good. The foam actually worked out. Like it's definitely not in a situation to where like I'm doing leaves and hearts and stuff like that on our cups, no latte art or anything, but the foam was surprisingly good, but I have a lot of work to do on my mocha pot and my coffee to milk ratio. Like I basically had light tan milk the first day, and then it was a little better the second day, but still just like a nice.
So you're really heavy on the milk at this
nice
point.
Nice cup of warm milk. Yeah. So
okay.
Definitely going to probably just like, because I have a cup, I'm not going to not fill it up. And so I was
right.
I filled it up, and it was just a warm glass of milk. So I just felt like an old man who needed to drink his milk and take a nap. But overall, like I think I'll be able to get there before too long. And the mocha pot is something I'd like to spend a little more time getting better at brewing. It's a fun brewer, and it makes pretty good coffee. Like it's something you can take camping. You can take it anywhere really, and just make some super strong coffee and get going. So it was fun.
All right, good deal, man.
It was something different. We made lattes, and then we were all sick of the same pancakes, so I made apple cinnamon pancakes, so like regular pancakes, and then like the butter and apples, brown sugar, cinnamon.
You all fancy.
Oh dude, it was good. And
that
so I'm going crazy here, but I know we have a real conversation to have, but we got these from this market thing. We got a bunch of these breakfast sausage, like a chub, you know, the little tubes.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at, we were using them, and we were just like crunching them up to make crumbled sausage. And I was looking at that thing, I was like, man, I wonder if I can smoke that thing as like a tube and then just like slice it and have like sliced sausage with like a nice smoke ring and stuff on it. And Kristen looked at the recipe. She's like, well, we got an extra one. I was like, all right, threw it in the smoker. And it is so freaking good, man. Like, it's got just a nice little smoke ring around it, and it sizzles perfectly. Oh, dude, it is legit. So that is how, like, whenever we do get a shop, like, it's going to be so confusing because there's all these good things that I want to share with people. So, like, on the weekends, we're going to have to do, like bust out the smoker or do some, I don't know what we're going to do, but, like, I need...
We're going to lose our freaking minds is what we're going to do. Gonna it's going to be great.
Fan-freaking-tastic.
I tell you what, man. Especially those, like, when we get it, those first couple months where, like, we're still just so freaking excited and doing everything purely out of, like, oh my gosh, we can do this now? Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
It'll be a great time to come and check us out.
Yes.
Like, there'll be a lot of things that don't work, but it will, none of it will fail to work because it's not good.
Yeah.
It'll fail to work because we're trying to do 3 million things. And it'll be... It'll be a delightful disaster for the people who come and get to reap the benefits.
That tends to be our way. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, all right. Let's get into it. So
let's do it, man.
Skillfully alluded to our conversation in that we've been going through the four loves and we are on the fourth, if not the pinnacle of the four loves. And this is one. So the fourth love is agape, what we know to be unconditional love. And this one probably took me the longest to really grasp. I will have to admit that I did not have any good concept of unconditional. So like I struggled through most of my faith with like a form of Phariseeism, you know, legalism, whatever you want to call it. I have to do this in order to get that type of a mentality.
Yeah.
And so unconditional didn't make sense to me. And, you know, I've always been one to favor justice over grace. And it's taken a lot of work to figure out that you don't pick one over the other. They go together. And so one of the things that really helped me grasp that concept, I think, is, again, I mean, with loves, I'm sorry, I'm a broken record, but my kids have taught me more in these last 5 years, 6 years, then I've learned in like 30. Like it's like this condensed, they're a constant mirror to who you are and everything else. So like they teach, it is a cycle of feedback that most of us are not ready for. And so I've learned almost everything I know about love from the very first time that we saw our baby boy's heartbeat. Like from that point forward, I would say that I began actually learning what love is. And I think with agape, the way that I learned it, it wasn't anything that I felt. It actually was very retrospective. Like I had to look back and then use reason and think about it. And once it was actually like a Bible verse. I was reading through these things and stopped and looked back. And it was like, hey, over time, like my kids have been the most amazing things ever in the world. And then they have driven me absolute bonkers. And then they've done this and done that. And they've done it within like a span of an hour, right? And they've like shut me down to where like I'm having such a time I have to go sit in a dark room to decompress. And then I've been on like such a high from just them. Like my youngest does these random acts of love. She'll just walk up and give you a kiss and then walk away. And you're like, oh God, like I'm walking on sunshine for like hours and hours. So it's an emotional roller coaster, man. And it's terrible on the neck. So I'm working through these things and it's up and down. But then when I stopped and looked back, there's kind of this constant line that passes through all of the experiences and all of the emotions and all of those things. And this weird constant that never changed was love. That's the only thing that I can really attribute it to. But it is like this perfect line. It never changed regardless. And it was always well above all of the emotions. Like the emotions and the feelings never even came close to touching it. And so it wasn't until I stopped and looked back and was like, holy cow, there's this line above all of the things I was feeling at the moment. Because when you're in the moment, you don't, like, reason is gone. Like you're just trying. Right. I shouldn't use any of these analogies because it'll make me a terrible person and this is being recorded. So I'm trying to find one that's not going to get me into trouble. But like, you're just trying not to be a bad person at that moment, you know, for the most part. That's right. Lot of what you're doing. And so you're very in the moment. Your emotions are running rampant. And so you're not thinking about it. You're not thinking, oh, this is going to be beneficial for me in the future. No, you're just trying not to be crazy. And then sitting back and looking back, you're like, holy cow, you know what? Even though they made me crazy, the love never changed. And that was perfectly steady. And so then I began to understand, like, oh, okay. Now I can apply that up towards God and be like, hey, God's love never changed. Like even with, and this was, you know, I'm an Old Testament guy. And so like he's put Israel through the ringer more than once, but his love never changed. And so, you know, there's always a lot of victim mentality of, oh, I had this terrible life, or, oh, I did this wrong, so I need to make up for it and do these things. And you're like, no, you're missing the point. You're in the ringer, not for that reason. And you're not getting out of the ringer by doing these things. Like, yeah, it's about me and you in a relationship, not about the things that you can do, because you can't really do anything for me. And so all those things like ran around, and I eventually began to formulate this idea of what unconditional meant. And the unconditional, again, that's how I was able to say, oh, justice and grace, they all go together. Because even though I love the crap out of my kids and I would let them get away with anything, I don't let them get away with anything, right? Like, I don't let them get away.
Right.
Like, I'm probably harder than I need to be, but they don't get away from, they don't get away with anything, to be honest with you. But it's for their benefit, you know, and they're right. Mad, they're throwing fits, and my youngest has gotten to where she's saying, nobody will be my friend ever. And I'm like, oh, God. And then I'm like, you know what, I bet God looks at me and says things, looks, sees the exact same thing. It's just me throwing this tantrum. I'm like, God doesn't love me. as I, you know, flail around on the ground. And that's, you know, being in the position of seeing these things and knowing that my position never changed, even though her experiences are going up and down and changing back and forth, mine's never changed. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, I'm busting her chops or I'm, you know, praising her or whatever that is, my position's never changed in the relationship. And that's how I've kind of started to grasp the idea of agape.
Nice. And I think that, so again, like you said, agape is this unconditional, selfless, self-sacrificing love. And it's interesting. So in his discussion of the four loves, Lewis draws a really clear and distinct line between the other three and agape.
Mm-hmm.
He calls storge, philia, and eros, he calls them all natural loves. Like, these are loves that we can experience and understand on that natural human level. Mm-hmm. Like, our human experience is enough to inform us on them. But he called agape a uniquely Christian love, a divine love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, I'm not even going to say I think. The reality is it's because agape is a word that has its specific meaning when we understand it in light of the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Because like all those things you were talking about with your daughters, the idea of, you know, or your, the experience of those other loves, this idea of like having to earn it, having to be worthy of it.
Right.
Or like it being, here's this much love that you can have, but if you want the rest, I need to see this. And like it, all of those comparisons and all of those understandings completely fall apart when we define it by what's happening on the cross. Because when you look at it, Christ on the cross, he held nothing back. Like God, mm-hmm. in the second mm-hmm. person of the Trinity, Jesus Christ, offered everything he was, body, blood, soul, and divinity, on the cross, and not for the worthy. Intentionally and specifically, yeah. not for the yeah. worthy. You know, like as we see in his like dying words, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, which I know are not actually quite his dying words.
Right.
It is finished. But, you know, you get it.
Yeah. One of the seven. Yep.
And
yep,
so
yep.
like,
I got you.
It's one of those things. Like when we look at the other three, you know, we're looking at friendship or familiar or family love or even passion. Like these are all things that, again, all we need to understand them is we can rely entirely on human experience. But part of why it's so hard for us mm-hmm. to understand agape love in anything other than an analogy is because it's beyond us. Like we are
I like that.
We're broken and sinful. Like we can't do anything perfectly, including loving, you know, like even your analogy with your daughters right. and everything. It's great. And it's probably just about as close as we get here on earth. But, you know, you were talking about how in the moment you still have these huge struggles with it and trying to like maintain that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
God doesn't have that. The agape doesn't have to worry about it. Like it's already taken care of because what they're doing, no matter how bad an idea you know it to be, that has no impact on the love you have for them. Like, it's just, it's a non-factor because this agape love is pure and total gift. And so there's no strings attached to it. There is no, like, really, there's no thought of it. It's just what it is. And I think that it ties into that idea of one of the things that I talk to the students about all the time when we're talking about God's love for us. I'm like, you need to understand that God's love for you is literally what's keeping you in existence right now. Like, if God stopped thinking about us for even the briefest of moments, we wouldn't die. We would cease to exist. You know, death is body and soul being separated. If God weren't thinking about us and loving us at this very moment, we would not be body, soul, at all. And so that agape love that God has for us is like, he loves our existence. He loves that we are rather than what we are. Like the fact that you exist just brings God joy. And he loves your existence itself, let alone, you know, anything that you do with that existence. And so...
Yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense why Lewis would frame that purely in the divine then, because I don't think there's a time in which humans can operate without a condition. And I mean, like, parent-child is probably going to be the closest because it's a, you know, the natural bond. But I mean, there's always conditions on the love. There's broken families. You know, it's not a perfect thing. There are people... I'm just going to leave it at broken families.
Yeah,
we all have our examples. And so there really is, it's not just like, it may have started out that way, but it doesn't always end that way. It doesn't always, it's that love is going through a journey as well. And so kind of,
Well, and so that's like,
interesting. It almost makes, it makes agape like really hard to talk about because it's kind of so far out.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Well, and you know, anytime something is defined, you know, like I jokingly said, I was just going to declare it a mystery and move on and just leave everything to you. But like, there is an element of truth to that idea that like, when something is wrapped up in the divine, we have to acknowledge that we can grow in our understanding of it, but we can never fully wrap our heads around it. And that struggle is where the beauty is, that struggle to understand it. That's us, like, as we're sitting here, kind of like trying to parse our way through it and trying to figure out how best to explain it or how best to talk about it, what we're actually doing is growing in our understanding of God. Like when the Apostle John says that God is love, he doesn't mean it in some purely like flowery way, the way we often kind of tend to throw it around in the modern world.
Sure.
He was just stating a fact. Like, love is the defining trait of God. And so when we're talking about this divine love, we're talking about the very heart, the very core of who God is. And so, yeah, it's going to be something that, like, if you find yourself feeling like you've got it completely figured out, you probably need to start over, like, immediately. But that doesn't mean that it can't be talked about. You know, so one of the things that we've got to remember with it being a divine love is that our experiences of it are all going to tie into the divine in some way. We'll still experience them as humans because that's, you know, what we are. We don't have any other option. But so like that, the parent-child example that we keep coming back to, because again, I think it's probably the closest one we'll have. And you're right, there are brokennesses there. And even in families that manage to maintain like their whole, they manage to stay together and all of this, it doesn't change the fact that there's still brokenness in the people in the family. And so, you know, the family will never perfectly reflect that what the family was created to be. Like, there's always going to be our woundedness will always get in the way on some level. But at the same time, it is still an experience of that divine love. it probably comes as a shock to no one, but as we're discussing this C.S. Lewis book, I'm still going to go ahead and bring Chesterton into it. Like, one of the things he talked about is that what makes the love of family and the love of neighbor so central to the gospel message is the fact that we can choose neither. Like, you can't choose who your family is, and you can't choose who your neighbors are. Like, yeah, you can choose where you live, but it's not like you get to screen the people who move into right. the neighborhood or anything like that. And so it's the most, in some ways, because of that randomness, it's also the most real. You know, when you're looking at your children,
right?
Like, yeah, they're yours, but like, you had very little say when they were born who they were going to be. God gave them to you. And so, like, they are that divine gift to your family, to you and your wife, to the grandparents, the aunts and uncles. And so because they are this divine gift, that love that you experience is going to be, like, more closely tied to that divine love. Because it's not,
okay.
like, you were talking about it, even when we were talking about the philia, that like familial love. And you were talking about, like, when you mm-hmm. first saw your little boy, it was like, oh yeah, no, I love you. Like, there's no other choice.
Yeah.
Like, it isn't something.
Right. He was, right, exactly. And therefore.
And so yeah. that is still an example of philia. And I think that ties into one of Lewis's other points, which was that agape is, because it's the divine love, it's also the one that kind of defends against and prevents some of the perversions that can occur in the natural love, natural loves. And so, okay. like, okay. when we talked about all three of them, we talked about how they can kind of go wrong, right? Like, yes. Eros, very yeah, obviously,
yeah,
is like
yeah, yeah,
that.
I got you.
Passionate lust. Storge can be... kind of a relationship of use where these people are there for yep. you. And philia can become yep. this sort of like entitled owed thing.
Right.
And that's, you know, it makes sense that the natural loves, the loves that are contained in our humanity, would suffer a lot of the same kind of weaknesses that the rest of our humanity does.
Exactly. The positive and negative,
like,
potential
this,
that humanity has.
Just
right?
like our humanity right. was created by God and so is incredible, it can also, because it's broken and fragile and twisted, it can become warped. And that's what we mean when we say perverted. I don't mean, like, I'm not talking perversion in, like, the criminal sense on
right.
this or anything, but
absolutely.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like this twisted form of it. It still has a lot of those, like, outer characteristics. You can see how it once was love or how it ties to love, but it just ain't it no more. And agape, this divine love, which is, again, beyond us in a lot of ways, serves as this kind of counterbalance. It's the purifying force. Like, all of our other loves should be rooted in this. Because that's what, I mean, think about, what did we talk about as the weaknesses? Largely a selfishness.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, most of the other ones come down to various forms of selfishness when the love gets skewed. And what
yeah,
is agape?
You're right, yeah. And
it's selfless and self-sacrificing.
Yeah.
It's the cure.
Yeah. Yeah, I was chewing on these things on one of my walks, and the phrase that kind of came into my brain when I was working through these was that, you know, this, and I was actually comparing it to the corruptions mm-hmm. of the love. There's like the love, it's corruption, and then there's the taking it to the point of sacrifice, and that was like the other extreme. So the pendulum on the swing of, you can corrupt the love by becoming this. If you take it to self-sacrificing, it looks like this. And that's kind of connecting some things in my brain. There was like, if you take Eros or philia and you take it to the self-sacrificing mm-hmm. point, then you're starting to scrape that surface of agape. You're seeing what that looks like, what agape looks like in the family or in the friendships or in the world, like in these different
yeah.
ways. So that makes
and sense this is why okay. in the Christian sacrament of marriage. So we're not talking about like state marriages or any of those kinds of things. This is not a debate about any of that stuff. But in the understanding of the Christian sacrament of marriage, one of the things that's really stressed is the idea that a marriage is actually between three persons. The husband, mm-hmm. the wife, and the yeah. Holy Spirit. Because if God's not at the center of it, the husband and the wife don't have a chance.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's so from my imagery, what I've actually, the way that I've been considering it is, because God is love. And if I love my wife, if I love my kids, that love, that connection is not my emotions. It's actually God that connects me to Kristen. And so I pray regularly that God is there, that God is doing this, because I don't want something different. I want the bond, the rope that connects the two people, to be God, not some weird connection that is not him, because it would never hold. So if God is love, and if we love each other, then that third thing there that's connecting the Absolutely. Two should be God. And so that makes a lot of sense that you're saying that. I'm like, oh, that, man,
that's exactly
yes,
it. Because, and again, like you said, what's going to hold you together? It's not going to be you. No disrespect.
Yeah. Like, no, that's for sure. I was about yeah, to go, amen. No, I mean, like,
it's just a fact. It's the same thing, you know, we talked yeah. about back when we were both doing youth ministry stuff together and everything too. This whole idea of like, no, I'm not trying to offer you me. I've seen where me gets you, and it's not mm-hmm. like, don't get me wrong, it's not the worst thing ever, but yeah. you know, you can do better, and you should be.
You can.
And so like, that's the whole thing. We want to bring everything back to God. And so we want to purify our yep. friendships. We want to purify our family relationships. We want to purify our mm-hmm. passionate loves for people, all by bringing them to the cross. Because the cross is
that point. Exactly.
It's the ultimate yeah. gift of self, you know, without demanding anything in return.
And not just a part, the whole
thing. Like, Jesus didn't die on mm-hmm. the cross so that he could guilt trip us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because that, unfortunately, right, that's right. what a lot of our self-sacrifice can become. Like, even that idea of giving of yourself. It's debt exactly.
credit, yep.
We're balancing the checkbook. Like, and then.
Yep. We're trying to create a debt for somebody now. To owe us. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I got you.
And so, like, we need to. Yep. We need to
so
purify.
So I got a question for you. So with this one being kind of such a high and lofty, and I've actually struggled bringing it into like my normal everyday pragmatic applications, how do we talk to kids mm-hmm. about agape? Do we talk to them about it? Like, how does this fourth love trickle down or apply to kids and students? You know, like, how do we translate that? Is it just purely internal and our relationship with God is what makes us act this way, or is there actually like conversations?
I think there needs to
be
conversations.
Like, how does this,
like, honestly, I think we need to just be okay with the fact that we're gonna have to have essentially the same conversation a lot of times before it starts to sink in. But it's one of those things, like, we're just pouring that drop of water on the same exact spot every time, and eventually it'll start to soak in. Because, like, so when I'm talking to the students, you know, when I was teaching second grade, which was brief, but nevertheless, like, I was there for about a quarter of a school year, and when we were talking about it, like, I didn't use the word agape. You know, I had no need to bring Greek into it. The English is going to confuse them plenty. But like, just that idea of, no, you need to understand that God doesn't love you because of what you've done. And so God's not going to stop loving you mm-hmm. because of what you've done.
Because of
And what so you've like done. When we yeah, when I like we that. I like that can a lot. Get that basic idea in, and so that's kind of, to me, that's kind of the counterpoint on what you were saying, is that it's not something to trickle down. Like, it's the foundational starting piece. Because nothing else matters until there's that. Until they know that God loves them, God's commands are just more rules. Until they know that God loves them, their value is dependent on finding other people who will like what they're doing and appreciate what they're doing. And so like that has to be kind of our starting point, is like, no, your foundation is that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, that God loves you. He always has and always will. And like, honestly, there's nothing you can do about that. That there's not a single thing you can do about it. You're stuck. As they get a little bit older, then you can start bringing in the St. Paul stuff about, I have become convinced that neither life nor death nor principalities nor powers nor, and he goes through that whole long list of all of these things that will never succeed in separating us from the love of God. It's literally impossible. All we can choose is whether we're going to accept that love or not. And so, like, for me, that's kind of where my life lesson comes in. Is like, I'm taking it. I'm not letting you get mine, just in case. Perfect.
I think mine will be
different. We do need to internalize it before we can talk to others. So we've got to start loving ourselves. Like, we need to stop. We need to stop.
Yeah.
Being our own worst enemies and our own harshest critics. Like, acknowledge when you mess up, absolutely. But we need to stop hating ourselves for it. Because our sins are offenses first and foremost against God, and he's not hating it for us, so we have no right to hate ourselves. And when we look at Jesus saying that we have to love our neighbors as ourselves, there is this really clearly stated, like, I used to call it an implied command, but it's really not. Like, he says it very clearly. Like, you have to love yourself to be able to do that. When Jesus says love your neighbor as yourself, he doesn't mean, so if you think you're a piece of garbage, go ahead and treat your neighbors like they're pieces of garbage too. Like, that's clearly not the goal here.
Right.
And so acknowledge that we are loved and are therefore lovable, and then start sharing that.
Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah, I remember eventually somebody kind of pointed out the fact that if I was going to keep condemning myself with shame for ever and ever, then you're basically saying, God, you're not good enough. I know better than you. And, you know, and all these other things. And you just go about life and you can't actually ever find redemption because you're not allowing yourself to do that. And so, and that ties into my life lesson, which is going to be just that idea that if agape is the foundation, if you are and therefore God loves you and there's nothing you can do about it, and that's where we build everything from, think of the confidence that we would have had or the kids would have going forward. Like, if they had this at their core foundation that nothing they could do can remove the love of God from them, then why would they be afraid of what people think? Why would they be afraid of this? Why would they be afraid of doing that? Like, you could, and I think about this because I was afraid of friggin' everything growing up, right? Like, socially, I'm still racked with anxiety, social anxiety about what people think about me. If you had a foundational understanding that no matter what, none of those things can remove God's love from you, you can operate with a freedom that very few people know. And that freedom, like, I just, in my, just the imagining it, I'm like, I want that so bad, because that would be, you could do anything. You could literally take over the world because people's opinions wouldn't tear you down, because you have this structure, this foundation that's not getting swayed. And I really like that. And it's not corrupted. Like you said, if you build on family first, which is probably how me and you probably really got most of our foundations, or me for sure, you know, we built from family and then learned the others. There's problems there. Like you said, it's not a perfect love. And so if we can build the foundation from agape and then understand family from that position, then you're cooking with gas, you know, like that's a different conversation than starting with family that's corruptible and trying to understand.
Absolutely, agape. Man. I think that's great.
I really like that. I really like that. The idea of that being the foundation, because that's going to give confidence and freedom that our kids desperately need. So Man, love it. Love it. All right, well, that's the end of the four loves. There's no more loves after that. Sorry, folks. We're all out of love.
That's so far from what we were just saying. Mixed messages.
Oh, man. Oh, you got anything else on your brain, man?
All of it that I just need to go away so I can go to sleep.
Deal, deal. All right, with that, everybody,
adieu.
We will say...
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening to another Inkledoo podcast. We hope you really enjoyed it. We really enjoyed making it. If you did enjoy it, please do us a favor and make sure to share it on all your own social media so that other people can find us and enjoy us as well.